What is up, everybody? Welcome to Toffee Blues USA. This is Toffee Blues USA. I usually say messed up my spiel already. This is Jerry coming to you, probably not live from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This is Toffee Blues USA, your source for all things Everton American style. What does that mean? Well, I don't have really cool ways of saying things. That's what it means, like my English counterparts. Joining me today, I have another special guest. This is my first time meeting this fellow, and he's got a companion with him as well. Please welcome Forrest and Chai, who you may see some of.
Right, we'll see, But it's nice to be here, Jerry. Appreciate y'all having me on.
So just for the folks watching and listening, Chai is his hound dog, very cute. Came in, busted in earlier. It's really cool. We will welcome interruptions from Chai.
No doubt.
So Forrest, let's get through all the what's, and then we'll get to more of the whys and hows. So Forrest, where are you located, man?
So right now I live in Annapolis, Maryland. But I'm originally from Charlotte, North Carolina. I actually just moved up here about 3 months ago now. Me and my girlfriend, it was just an opportunity for us. I'd lived in Charlotte my whole life. So it was just an opportunity for us to be somewhere new, be close to DC, which is really helpful with finding a job for my degree. So yeah, it's nice up here, just a little expensive, you know, it's Maryland.
So to be super intrusive, what's your degree?
So I graduated from UNC Charlotte with a degree in international public relations and a minor in journalism. Ideally, this is like my dream scenario is I get a job at Everton. I work in their fan engagement department and eventually work my way up to be director of communications at the club. You know, that's I'll just touch on this. A couple of years ago when I was at Liverpool, I met Alan Myers. We had some interaction on Twitter and I told him I was coming over, you know, and just, I don't really remember why or what the context was, but he was like, hey, well, bring me a box of Baby Ruth candy bars because my niece loves them. I'm like, okay, great. I couldn't find a single box of Baby Ruth candy bars.
You're kidding.
A sorted box. I you know, there was like Hershey's chocolate, Baby Ruth, Milky Way. He's like, oh, well, I love the Milky Way bars, so this is perfect. So he took me on like a private tour at Goodison. It was fantastic. I got to see some places that you don't usually get to see in the tour. Got to see like the boardroom and stuff like that. And then afterwards, he went and got me a kid at the club store. It was fantastic. But when we were walking along the pitch, he was like, you know, so what would you want to do if you worked for the club? And I looked at him like, Alan, you know, I would want your job. And he's like, okay, well, I might give it to you. So that's been a dream of mine for a long time. Yeah.
That's awesome. What kick-ass story. That's really cool. I'm like geeking out over here, man. That's very cool. Cause you were so specific. And I was like, oh, he's totally like thought everything through. That was awesome. That's why I had that goofy grin on my face. And then you were like, oh, by the way, I met Alan and I saw how very real this could be. And I was like, oh. Great
guy. I love Alan. He's so down to earth. I mean, his time at the club was such a blessing. And it was sad to see him go. You know, circumstances behind it are definitely at the conjecture, but he's still very much involved on social media, just with the fans in general. He definitely is an Evertonian at heart. And it's such a great thing to still be friends with him.
And he interacts with supporters all the time online.
You know? He doesn't shy away from it.
Yeah, which is really cool. So your local supporters group do you participate in one up in DC, or are you still tied to one, I don't know, maybe in the Charlotte area?
So Charlotte's definitely still more near and dear to my heart. I was actually just in Charlotte over this past weekend. I was there for Thursday till yesterday, just seeing some family, seeing some friends. I went to QCBC where the Toffees meet in Charlotte. I actually worked there for 3 years. It's funny. I started that bar up, and then the current owner, Everett, he took over. And then I got another job offer and went away, but he was an Everton fan and he made it an Everton bar. And you know, I sat there and just like old times, I watched us lose to Southampton. You know, it was like I never left, honestly. But it was good to see everybody again. Cam is pretty much the leader of the group in terms of the social media activity and posting and getting people together. He's a great guy. He's been doing it for a long time. And just to name drop one more person, Roger Smith.
I know both of them.
I love Raj, man. He's a firecracker, man. He's always down in the derbies and he's stirring up trouble, and I love it because we need that. We need that faith.
Dude, Roger is an absolute force of nature. He's like he's up here, and I'm in Winston, and that's where he lives too. And so I see him at the Wake games all the time, the Wake Forest games. Well, when they were allowing fans, you know what I mean? They're still allowing supporters. So Roger's usually there at those, I'm sure. But yeah, he's connected me to a decent amount of Everton-based stuff. He's a cool guy. And Cam had on the show, actually.
Yeah.
That's why when I was saying that about your local support, I was like, I know where this is going. Yeah. I know that he was, that's my insider light stalking that I've done.
I haven't had a lot of interaction with Baltimore and DC ones yet. Mostly because of COVID. It's just, not people going out as much. But I'm sure I'll get to know them as I continue to live up here. I really would love to meet them. I know there's an Everton bar in Annapolis called Fado. It's an Irish bar. But a couple of times I went, there were never any Everton fans there. And they've got, like, it's weird because it's an Everton bar, but the owner is a Liverpool fan from Ireland. You know, big shock. But it is what it is. You know, there's a lot of Liverpool memorabilia. There's a lot of Everton memorabilia. I prefer to just watch it at home at this point. You know, it's the comfort of my home. I can sit there and wake up 10 minutes before the match and I have to get ready and pour myself a pint. It's okay. I got this.
Yeah, I am hoping to bring my whole family down to Queen City Bites and Crafts. I'm hoping to do that. I have to do it at a time where my kids don't have games. That is my big stinky, not so fast that I can't handle that yet, but I will get there. Talking to Cam about it, talk to Roger about it. I really do want to get down there to watch a game. And that's what's funny is I may actually meet you there one of these weekends too, which is crazy and awesome. Meeting another person that I did a show with, you know, very cool. So that's more your local supporters is more Carolina Toffees in Charlotte. You told me a really good Everton story, but why? Why are you an Everton supporter? How are you an Everton supporter?
So that's the question I get asked the most. Whenever I talk to somebody over here about soccer, you know, I tell them I support Everton. They're like, oh, why is that? You know, I can chalk it up to the fact that they've had a good amount of American players playing for them. You know, Tim Howard was such a long time servant of the club, did some great things, really is pushing the game in America still for Everton. Donovan played there a couple of times, but really where it started was in high school. The high school I went to, believe it or not, was pretty big into soccer. It was a really small private school, but a lot of the kids watch soccer still.
What was it?
So it was called Arborbrook Christian Academy.
Okay.
It really, really small. I had a graduating class of 9 kids. So.
Holy hand grenade. That is not, that is, wow. Yeah, that's different than my Reynolds High School public school experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I went from Weddington Middle, which was like a 1,200 person school, to a school that had never had more than 46 kids in the high school at one time. Basketball team, though, that was a big thing to be a part of. But soccer was, a thing that a lot of people watched there. So in like 9th grade, I started watching it just to try to fit in a little bit because a lot of these kids had known each other for a long time. And I was just watching what was ever on ESPN. So it was usually I was watching Manchester United. I guess I was a de facto fan of them, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, etc. It came to the FA Cup semifinals where Everton beat United on penalties. And I was watching that and I Tim Howard was obviously playing for the Blues at the time, but I kind of just fell in love, you know, just that penalty shootout, watching Howard make those saves, just the pure elation from, I remember, you know, a very poignant moment was when Bill Kenwright, like, just is lifting his arms up and he's just like screaming to the heavens. And like, in that moment, I was like, that's like, I saw like somebody's love for their club. I didn't know who the guy was at the time, you know. Just another person in the stand.
Yeah.
It just hit in that moment. I was like, that's my team. I'm going to support them. You know, there's another moment where Howard's walking towards the Everton fans on that side of Wembley. And he's just swinging his arms back and he's lifting his arms up. And it was such a great shot that really stuck with me. And it's been a very wild love affair ever since. You know, my hair has fallen out because of it. It is what it is, but you know, it's never been a moment where I regretted supporting Everton. You know, I love the club. And as I know the club more, and I got to know the people who support the club more, and Scousers and the people of Liverpool in general, like, I just, everything about the club and where it is, and it's been huge for me. I just love it. I'm totally in love with it. I would die for Everton.
That's freaking beautiful, man. That's great. So favorite Everton player?
Current squad, Richarlison, by far. I think his passion for the club And the fact that he matches that passion on the pitch as well with his work ethic. Yeah, he maybe gets a little hot-headed at times, and maybe he throws himself to the ground a little bit too sometimes, but he is such a player that really embodies what I think Everton wants to show on the pitch, what I think the fans want to see on the pitch, is a player who gives their all for the club, regardless of how they're playing, is going to continue to give their all for as long as they're on that pitch. He really embodies what I think the Everton spirit is.
Oh, yeah. So that's one of the things that I don't know. I like seeing someone who's not going to they're not going to change their game. Yes. You know what I mean? They're not going to change their game. You're still going to see that same intensity every single week in, week out. And if he's missing chances, it's not because he doesn't have the medal. You know what I mean? It's just because he just happens to miss them that day. We know he's I gotta love Richarlison. That's a good call. If you were any Everton player, like all of them, one that's your personality, which one is Forrest-like personality? Every once in a while, I bring out this question because I'm fascinated by the responses.
I'd like to say Luka Dean, and this is just me totally going off the top of my head. I'm not left-footed at all. I play wing back when I play footy, but I'm definitely I'll fill in on the left if I have to, but my left foot's not going to be doing too much more than taking a touch. I just he is another player who I think gives his all on the pitch. His head doesn't usually drop, but you know, as we saw over the weekend, he's kind of prone to some moments of hot-headedness, which I think I could have in myself as well. But just his professionalism, the way he carries himself on the pitch and off the pitch, is something I see in myself and the way I approach life as well. In terms of just always trying to give my best for everything, to hone my craft, and just in whatever I do, and continue to be professional and be loyal to the place I'm at.
Yeah. Like that. Very cool. See, I always love the mindful responses I'm getting from folks on this. It's great. Gives me some insight into your person. Yes. another question. Let's say we sign a big player, like, I don't know, Lukaku in 2014. Are you the type of person to take like a blue pyro and run around outside? Is that your kind of thing?
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's a video I'll never live down, and I never want to live down. I was very
happy. Don't live that down.
I was so happy in that moment just to have him sign permanently. He was a player that was so big for us in Martinez's first season, and I knew was the kind of player we needed to carry us on. And I was just a saga over that summer just to wait and see what happened. I remember him dropping hints and pictures of him on a plane and stuff. I remember fans asking Martinez, I can't remember where they were having a friendly at, if he was coming. And he's like, it's close. And then it happened like the next day. It was great. It was just this big release for me. And I know I had made a promise to somebody on Twitter that was going to do it. I stuck by it. It's still like probably my most retweeted and liked tweet. I don't tend to try to go viral a lot because it's just not my thing. I want to enjoy myself on Twitter and not have people kind of going crazy on me, but it was I remember everything about that day. It was so funny. Just the Blues that support it and were laughing at it. All the rival fans who thought I was an idiot for doing it. I'm like, I don't care. I didn't do this for you. For Blues. It didn't matter. It was a great time.
Yeah. John told me about it and I was just like, oh, got to research this. This is awesome. So,
you are not. I haven't been able to find it in a while.
It's like, he found it. I'll forward it to you afterward. I think it's the NSNO account posted. It was a Vine.
Yes, it was a Vine. Yes.
Yeah. It was just, sorry, everybody who feels like this is like person to person conversation, but I just find this awesome, but, very, very cool. Last week I was talking to the Rob Vera, because that's his Twitter name. He's a music guy, and he gave me a serious recommendation for an album to listen to. And I've been listening to it all week. It's been incredible. So Forrest, what is Forrest an expert on, and can you recommend me anything? Because I'm starting to realize I can enrich my life during these conversations.
Yeah. I guess I've been a bartender for 5 years. I've worked in restaurants for 10 years. So I'd say alcohol wise, I'm pretty keen. Let me ask you, what do you like to drink typically?
Whiskey, bourbon.
Whiskey, bourbon. Okay. Well, hey, you're right in my alley then. That's great. As far as whiskey and bourbon goes, I mean, I love a good old fashioned. I love a good Manhattan. My personal favorite drink, I'm sure you've had it before, is a Sazerac, actually.
No, never had that. Good. No, I normally just get like straight, like yeah. I want it. Yeah.
Okay.
Sazerac.
A Sazerac. It's a New Orleans cocktail. So Sazerac. I would do like 2 to 3 ounces of rye whiskey. You know, how it depends on however much you want to drink that night, because there's not going to be any other alcohol that really goes into it. You're going to do like just a very small bit of absinthe, maybe like a quarter ounce. And really you just want to rinse the glass with it.
You're genuinely talking my language now, my friend. Go ahead.
A couple dashes of Peychaud's bitters. It's a licorice-based bitter. It's another New Orleans bitter. It's delicious. It really, really comes alive in that drink. And just stir that up, pour it over a big sphere, and serve it with a lemon peel. And you've got a Sazerac, and it's fantastic. It's so good. It's strong. It hits you hard, but the absinthe, the Peychaud's, that licorice goes really well with the rye. The lemon just adds, you know, that extra bit of oil and extra bit, not sweetness, but what a lemon can add in terms of tartness, in terms of just brightening that drink up. It's fantastic. It's a really good
This is terrific. This is yes to this, is what I say.
In it, don't put any simple syrup or anything. Some people like to put a sugar cube in it. No, don't sweeten your whiskey. Come on now.
Yeah, I'm not. No, I agree. I'm with you. This is fantastic. In a minute, when I finish this subject, I'm going to throw this card, but I'm not throwing it away, just so you know, because that's my recipe. That's my holy crap. So excited about that. Awesome. Okay, so we must begin discussing football. Even
all right.
More so. Or in like current, anyway. I'm ready. So just to let everybody know what's happening, we're gonna have to go into the Southampton reaction. But then we're going to talk about the mailbag. We have some really good questions. A lot of them. And then we'll do a Newcastle preview. So, yeah, so that's your lineup, right? Yeah. So let's start with the I didn't want to stop the introduction because I don't want to talk about Southampton. I don't want to talk about that. It's awful. Yeah. I'm like, can we talk about your more formative years for us to just
well, in elementary
school. Let's do this. All right, let's get there. Gosh, well, that was an awful throw. All right, there we go. So, for those of you who have been living under stones and, you know, have not seen it, this is a spoiler for you. 2-0 loss. I'm just going to say it. I got the score right. I just didn't get the winner right on my prediction. And I also got the fact that Ings did not score. That is, for me, the tiniest of wins.
Thank God.
Tiny. So let me give you a list of possible topics, and I want you to kind of, you know, sink your teeth into whichever one you feel like strikes your fancy the most. Number one, any positives. That's the first possible topic. Any of them. Number two, did anyone seize an opportunity? Number three, their goals. Were they a result of our shittiness or their brilliance? Number four, Pickford? ? Number five, Dina red card. Probably got to talk about that. And number six, those seafoam kits.
You know, just because I don't want to talk about it too much, I'm going to talk about their goals. Because it was kind of bang bang. They happened within 2 minutes of each other. The first goal, we just switched off on a throw in. I think there's not much more to say to that. We weren't ready for it. They took it quick, and Ward-Prowse just ran straight past Dean, straight past Keane, and, you know, slotted it. It was a great shot. You know, give him due where it is, but we just switched off. And it was pretty similar for the second goal. They just got in behind us on our right-hand side, their left-hand side, which they seemed to do a lot. And I feel for Ben Godfrey because he's definitely not a fullback. It's definitely not the position that he is natural in, and you could see him get caught out a number of times. And they just got in, ball went over Luka Dean's head and just couldn't get a good block in, solid enough block. You could even make the argument that if Sigurdsson hadn't gotten anything on it, Pickford would have saved it. But ball goes in, it's 2-0. And I think from that point on, I don't think heads ever really dropped, but we never seemed like a coherent side. Like our game plan just never really seemed to come through. To touch on the couple of people who I think should have seized their chances and didn't, I think the one that everybody's really talked about is going to be Alex Iwobi.
Yeah.
You know, I like Alex Iwobi. I want him to succeed as I want any Everton player to succeed. I was relatively surprised when we bought him for what we did. I thought he was held in higher standing at Arsenal, but I can see why he was not. He's a player that, and I listened to a podcast on the Liverpool Echo, and I think it was David Prentice who mentioned that he's a player who has a lot of shades of Ross Barkley in the sense that you can kind of see his mind working. The decisions don't come quickly enough for him. And unfortunately, that means that a lot of his decisions are pretty bad. You know, there were moments where, you know, he had Dean overlapping in the 6-yard box that he missed and he decided to take on a shot. He missed, I think, the one moment that really stuck out to everybody is when I think James sent a crossfield ball to him. There was a lot of space, a lot of time for him, and he just miscontrolled it off his chest and went out on the touchline. Yeah. It was just frustrating to see that.
I will say with Iwobi, I see what you're saying about him and kind of thinking things through. I would almost say he's better when he relies on his instincts and he has less time.
Yep.
You know, it's almost like if he has more time to think things through, that's like the worst thing possible to happen to him.
Yeah.
If he's having to rely on just quick thinking, quick feet, and escaping from trouble, which is why I usually like him more cutting in, more in the middle. You see a better version of him, I feel like, you know? I was disappointed because I feel like I like him more than most folks, but I can't sit there and say, wow, what a game that guy had in a positive way. I can't, because that was just, it would prove that I haven't watched the sport very much in my life. Didn't have the best performance, but I'd still wouldn't sit there and say he was the worst player on the field.
Yeah.
You know, but I was expecting a lot from him. And funny thing to kind of, and I'm about to yield the floor again because I realize I get all like excited. I'm like, oh yeah. I want to hear Forrest. Someone commented, and it may have been, I'm trying to remember who it was on Twitter, because I was thinking that the whole time, I feel like we need another player like Richarlison who is more of a run behind type of a player, because Iwobi is a little bit more similar in my mind to a James, who's more of a 10 playing on the wing. And if we have more of a striker forward playing in that position who can run behind, it gives us a little bit more variation. I don't know. I feel like it's something we were lacking during that match. It took an element away from us and we were kind of a little bit more one-dimensional,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah.
It may have been Ryan from American Toffees, actually. I was trying to remember who it was, but anyway, just something. Yeah, poor Iwobi's, because one sec, I'm so excited when he has a great game.
it's not coming for him. I mean, he's had a couple in the cup here, but when that comes against lower league opposition, you say, okay, great. You know, you expect that of them. Now you need to make that next step. You need to be doing this week in, week out. You need to be challenging for a place in the team. And to talk to your point about needing a Richarlison type player, I mean, that's why I think Anthony Gordon should be starting if he's not playing. I think Richarlison and Anthony Gordon are similar in the sense that they're both very direct. You know, I think once you saw Anthony Gordon come on, one of the first contributions he had was to just run up the pitch and immediately somebody found him and it was, you know, a half chance. We didn't really make anything of it. But that's what he needs, somebody who's going to be direct, who's going to find that link up with Luka Dean. And if not, find that he's going to take somebody on and try to beat them. And he's got great pace. He's very good with the ball at his feet. He's obviously a young player who is developing still. And that's probably why Carlo hasn't taken the chance to start him. He wanted to give Iwobi, who's a little more established, he's been playing senior football for quite a bit longer now, to have that opportunity to show himself. And he didn't take that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I was disappointed to see Bernard come on instead of Anthony Gordon at halftime, because Bernard is a player that I really struggle to see a place for in this team sometimes. Mm. I think he's a player that is best suited to playing in that 10 role and sitting behind a striker, because I think it gives him more freedom. I don't think he's strong enough to play on the wing. I don't think he's I think he's fast, but I don't think he's fast enough to really get in behind. You saw a couple of moments where he was able to cut in and find an opportunity to find a ball across, but it just never really happened. And I think in the best moments we've seen him play this season are in those League Cup games where he's playing as a 10.
Yeah.
And got the ability to kind of take some time to find a pass, because that's his best attribute, is finding a pass.
Yeah.
He finds passes that a lot of other players, Bisbar, maybe James, and Gomez when he's on form, find. And it's disappointing, again, to Carlo to kind of not realize that, you know. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm disappointed to Carlo Ancelotti. I'm not. I love the fact that he's here. I think it's just a lot of head scratching going on in that moment. I don't think I was the only one who thought that. But I do think Anthony Gordon's the one who should be starting against Newcastle.
So to take the question, the first thing that you chose a little further, I said their goal's a result of our shittiness or their brilliance. Do you feel like our result was more a result of them looking strong or us dropping the ball that day? Or it could be a little bit of both.
I think it's more a little bit of both. I think they played very well on the day. And Southampton away has been a fixture that I don't think we won at for quite a while. I think we won last year, didn't we? Yeah. Richarlison scored the winner, I believe. But it's just one that we don't typically win. It's a place we don't typically play. And you can talk about bogey games all the time. I'm not a true believer in that. I'm also not a true believer in playing differently away from home and at home, but that's just me. I think Southampton played well. I think tactically we were outclassed. And it didn't help the fact that we just couldn't create anything. Bar, and I think the first 15 to 20 minutes, we played decent. We had a couple of chances, was back and forth. But once Southampton scored, we just kind of looked like our game plan went out the window, and just we just couldn't make anything happen. It's disappointing. I think a couple of players weren't fully fit. I think Allen, really, I think he worked his butt off. And in the role that he's asked to play, I think it's a little difficult when he doesn't have anybody to kind of mark. He's a player who man marks. He's a player who chases down and wins the ball back. And when he's, you know, got two strikers and no midfield man sitting in that 10 hole to kind of mark and use in the positional sense, he's just kind of running all over the pitch and trying to win the ball back. And that drags him out of position. That creates gaps in the defense. And, you know, Southampton exploited us quite a number of times. I think Hasenhüttl came out after the game and said, like, they weren't really planning on exploiting Godfrey the way they did. It just happened. That's Godfrey. He's out of position. It stinks for him. It's tough, but he's only going to learn from that experience and grow as a player. He's obviously taking it on in full stride, and you like to see that. In the very least, his head never drops. But it was definitely a mixture, both in terms of the way the result came. But also at the same time, I'm glad that we lost now rather than, you know, three more games in, we've won and we're all like, you know, say we're like 6 points, you know, clear at the top of the table, and we're all like dreaming of this title finish, and then we lose a game and it just all comes crashing down. It's good to have this happen now. It's good to get that loss in, to regroup, look at what went wrong and fix that now, because there's still a lot of the season left.
Or if we win the entire season and you go up to the very end and you lose to somebody like Watford, you know what I mean? Yeah. Total hypothetical, yeah, but right. That would be the worst, right?
I mean, jeez. Can you believe it?
Yeah, Jesus Christ, that'd be terrible. So who's your player? Who's your player of the match? I have one in my mind that there was a decision that mystified me about this player. I was really in love with the work that Decore was doing.
Yeah.
I was everywhere. Now, are we talking about a guy who was playing polished passes? Not really. Was he creating a lot of chances? Not really. But he was getting us the ball back. And did you see anybody else ripping their heart out for like every single tackle, every single chance to win a – I was like, here's our energy. You need to take your energy. You know, yeah. I was bummed. Like, I get it. You want more attack. You want an attacking player. You want to actually create more chances. I get it. But there's something that to be said for the energy of winning the ball back and pushing the ball forward from maybe not the most polished player, but damn it, you're stopping theirs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think maybe, you know, we could say that it was maybe one of Carlo's mistakes. from that game. And I agree, he played well. I don't think anybody really stuck out to me.
It's so fair though.
It was such a tough game to watch, man. It was very lackluster. Let me try to remember. I don't think Calvert-Lewin ever had a touch in the opposition box. I remember seeing that. And then I think he only had like 15 or 16 touches at all over the game. I mean, I understand his role is to score goals. I understand that he's not really a player where we have build up play from him, but he's got to get involved. If he's not involved, if he's only getting that many touches, I mean, it's tough to see us doing anything in a game. For James, I think they really focused on him. Didn't let him get that ball out and swing it out like he likes to do so many times. He got it out a couple of times, and I think that's when we were most dangerous, is when he get it out to Luka Dean or get it out to Iwobi when he was on the pitch. But the second half, I mean, nothing really happened. It was one of the most boring second halves I've seen from Everton since the end of last season.
I was sitting there watching it with my family, like at the edge of our seat the whole time. You know, my whole family finally sits down and watches a game. You know, usually they'll sit around and the kids will like kick, you know, in the den. And when there's a goal, they'll turn around, celebrate. But my family watched most of the game. What a shit fest to be a part of. It just happens, you know. I hate to see it, especially wearing those Purdy Seafoam kits. Those were nice.
I hope we wear those again.
I do too. I hope they don't think they're unlucky, because I'm not a big believer in that kind of thing.
That's the second time we've had a green kit, I think, ever. Because we had that like that dark army green and orange one. Yeah. I got one of those actually. I love it. It's a great kit. But I think we wore that like once the whole season. It was actually at Southampton away as well. So,
yeah. I remember that. Oh my gosh, I remember that. Yeah. It's funny, every time I think of that kit, I actually think of Ross Barkley more than anything for some reason. That's every time.
Good goal.
So we have to talk about this. I feel like there's a worldwide mandate that if this kind of thing happens, you have to talk about it. Don't give it a long time. It's been done to death. Luka Dean red card. Quick thoughts.
I think my sentiment has been since I saw it was, I understand why they gave it a red card. It was a challenge that looked a lot worse than maybe it actually was. I mean, he basically rode his ankle for a good 2 seconds, like a good, like 2 yards down the field. I've seen people who think that it was malicious and that he did it on purpose. I think people like that maybe haven't played the game as much as they'd like to say that they have. Because I think, and I've seen it said before, but I think maybe he was a little naive in the fact that he was running so close to Walker Peters, right? And maybe he should have known a little bit better. There might have been a hint of him trying to win the ball back and maybe winning it back at all costs. But I don't think it was something where he went out to like actually tangle his legs. If you see the contact, it's bang bang, his foot lands on his foot and it just twists and he rides it.
And before he even touches him, he's holding his hands up like, hey, I don't want any part of this. I'm not going to foul you.
Exactly.
And Walker Peters slows down in order to draw the contact.
Yes. Yeah. And I've seen some people say that he put his hands up and that means that he was about to do something malicious, but there's like a moment there where he has just a very, very small amount of contact and he's trying to let the ref know, I'm not trying to push him. I'm not trying to create this contact. Yeah. And then, you know, the penultimate contact happens and it's a red card. It's great that it got, you know, the ban got dropped down to one game instead of three. Mm-hmm. I think that's very fair. I didn't expect it to get rescinded, especially with all this stuff going on.
I didn't either.
The fallout. I think if it happened, it would have just been that much more on the FA's head to have to deal with and all the fans that are screaming at him already. But at the end of the day, it was kind of the the shit covered icing on top of a really bad cake. It was tough.
Do they have, I mean, this is me, like not really, I'm having a bit of a brain fart, but as far as the ability like to do VAR on something like that, do they do that?
They did. They did look at, I think VAR did have a look at it and they thought that it wasn't a clear and obvious error.
Okay, that's what it was.
And yes, and I think the 3-game ban is something that's automatic and a straight red card, and they can obviously rescind it or reduce the ban. I think reducing the ban, again, that's what needed to happen. It's what happened. I'm glad it did. I'm glad he's only missing Newcastle. And, you know, just hope that the reputation that the media seems to be giving Everton at the moment is not something that continues to live in referees' minds, because they can, you know, they read the news, they watch Sky Sports and BBC and all these other channels, you know, the pundits that come on and say that Everton are playing dirty and they're going out to hurt people. They're going to pay attention to that, and they'll have their own opinions on that, whether they think they do or not. But it's very possible that that influences their decisions in a game. You'd like to think that it doesn't. You'd like to think that they keep their professional standards and say, look, you know, regardless of what they're saying, we see the game this way and don't think that that's happening. But you never know. You know, you kind of have to just hope that just the media calms down. That's really what it needs to do, is calm down, because I understand that Virgil van Dijk is a huge player for Liverpool. He's you know, a world-class defender, and is obviously a player that's very well liked across, you know, the red-tinted media in the UK. But who's the guy? I can't remember his name now. It was Julian something who said that Pickford should be out for as long as Virgil van Dijk is injured. Like, man, like, I'm glad so many people came out and said, like, so many prominent people in soccer came out and said, yeah, that's ridiculous. I don't know why you'd go on air and say something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's very
the fact that that's an adult. Yes. That's an adult.
Yes.
You know?
And somebody who's played soccer professionally as well, to hear them say that, it's disappointing. I get that maybe you're a Liverpool supporter. I get that maybe you like Virgil van Dijk on a personal level, but you can't, like, throwing opinions out like that is just frustrating. I you know, I get that it's her job to do that, but it's frustrating to see that, because it doesn't do anything but kind of bring their reputation, the club's reputation, and the reputation of the media into ill repute when it's already kind of being dragged through the mud.
The thing is, though, man, if it's actually his job to give opinions, you know what I mean? If he's given those kind of opinions, he's not going to have a job long. So, cool. That means one less red out there. So, Julian Schmulian, whatever your name is, you know, that's – have your opinion. I don't think it carries much weight. I don't – you know? So, it's one of those things, just – I saw it and I kind of laughed, because I was like, that is a very juvenile thing. You know, here's the deal. The Luka Dean situation, I don't think it was a red, but I watch it and I get it. I get it. I get why we appealed, and I get why they brought it down to one. I'd have been kind of pissed off if they didn't, but it's one of those things where when you're a supporter, at some point, I feel like if you're a logical, rational human being, there's some bit of objectivity about how the game works and being self-aware has to kick in. One would hope. And if it doesn't, if you're saying a player who hurts somebody should be out for the same amount of time the other person's out, well, I'm just trying to figure out how you're setting that kind of precedent and then being able to actually enforce that moving forward. Yeah. It was reactionary,
but let's get away from it. That's been beaten for, like, it's like that thing is flayed. It has no skin left.
It's like South Park. He's over there beating that dead horse. Yes. So that match was a tough one. It had come at a night where I'd by the way, if anybody of you are curious, I'm wearing a Halloween costume from a family Halloween thing we had earlier. Saturday night, we had to go to another Halloween party that got canceled on our way to it, as I was wearing this. And the next morning, we lose to South Africa, and I've never felt like less super in my life. You know what I mean? It's just, this is a Clark Kent outfit that my wife got me, and I was just like, I don't deserve it. My team suck. All our parties get canceled. Life is rough.
Life sucks. You know, 2020.
That was the funny thing, is I was really curious as to how the Halloween function was going to work, you know, right in a pandemic. We had our masks ready, but it was going to be funny me showing up with this in my mask. Anyway, so Southampton reaction is, but that's what we've got, and we'll move on. And it's not like we lost to a shit team. They're not bad. Yeah. They're not bad.
They're only 3 points behind us.
Yeah. So have their fans been agitating at times? Yeah. Is it fun to watch Chico Azul bait them like crazy? Yes, it is so fun.
Man, he gets everybody. I don't understand how people still fall for that stuff. I'm going to touch on this real quick. Like, when I see those sort of things and people responding to that and falling for it, I'm like, man, like, what's going on through your mind right now? Are you just bored? Like, okay, fine, but There's got to be better things to do than to get into arguments with people that are obviously joking. But it is that's social media. It is what it is.
I feel like that Chico Azul deserves awards. I mean, actual physical like medal trophy because of the work is it's just so great. Like I reading his like match previews and stuff is just I'm.
They're excellent. Those are things that I've read for years. They're just so good. I sit there and read those and I'm like, you know, I don't know half the things he's talking about, but damn, is it funny.
It's just, I'm just like the way he calls people, like at one point he called somebody a dishcloth and I'm still using it.
Man, they can take any word and turn it into an insult and it works really well. Oh, he's a Jedi. Oh, he's a weapon. He's a dishcloth, you know, a ball bag, whatever, like anything. It just works.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, what is he talking about?
So yeah. So, but overall, you know, I do hate losing like that. I wish we had like been able to put up some fight. It felt like a very, you know, spiritless, like after a while we were like, oh, I scored, you know, but anyway, on to the next one. So I'm going to flick this card now. Mailbag. First question is actually a comment / request from Twitter at Carolina Toffees. and I, when I saw it, I was like, what are you talking about? And then when you were talking earlier, I'm like, oh, that's what he's talking about. It's Cam. I'm sure it was Cam saying it was great seeing him on Sunday. Talking about you, I guess, going over to Queen City Bites and Crafts. Given the match coming up, it'd be cool to have you describe Bainesy's free kick at St. James Park since you were there, since we're supposed to be playing Newcastle soon.
Yeah.
He says he thinks you were there for that.
I was. Yeah, so that was actually my first Everton match live. I was Newcastle in 2013, I think. Yeah, it was Moyes' last season. There's a lot of stories I could tell about that night. I'll just talk about Baines' goal. You know, Newcastle scored like 2-3 minutes into the game. It was like, oh, gosh, you know, poor, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, well, we're going to get smacked here. Like, I was still a pretty naive, young Everton fan at the time. And Baines just whacks in this like 40-yard free kick. Like, it's nothing. Like, it just flies in. We've got this great like view because St. James Park, the away fans sit up in the heavens. They're up in the corner of this stadium, right? You know, the literal corner of it. There's like 3,000 of us packed right there. And not only are we up in the corner, I'm in the corner of the corner. Like I'm on the back row by the corner of the two walls, like standing there with my mates. And he smacks his free kick in and it's pandemonium. Like I've been to live sports events like the Carolina Panthers and the Hornets, the Bobcats and all this stuff. And nothing matches that. Like there's an old guy in front of me who just turns around and grabs me and he screams at me and he turns back around. I don't know. My friends are jumping on me. I'm making sure I don't fall down the steps and break a limb and, you know, have to go to the NHS or whatever and be staying in Newcastle for the night. It was a crazy experience. And I was so glad we ended up winning too. The winner was great. An HEB scored, you know, 90 minutes. Or I think the one thing that comes to mind is at the end of the game, I think it was like 6 minutes added on time. My friend Maddie, he's just like, I'm okay to curse, right?
Do what you gotta do.
6 fucking minutes, like just like that. And hey, we have like a video of it. We used to have a video of it, him just saying that, like couldn't believe it, but we won, went down the steps singing his name. It was a great night. And there's, again, like I could do a whole show talking about that night and what led up to the goal and everything before it, because it was a crazy night.
That's awesome. Oh, that's great.
Dad, I'll just leave it there.
I am brutally jealous. So you went to an away match for your first match, which is, yeah. I feel like that's a little unique for an American going over there.
And I actually had tickets to go to a match against Chelsea at Goodison the week before. And I actually ended up getting food poisoning the night before the match.
That's really, a nightmare.
It was bad. I was sick up until like 3 or 4 in the morning. Elderly couple who were the parents of some friends we have over here in the States. And, you know, they were so kind looking after me. They gave me a bucket and I just sat beside the bed and did my thing. I ended up passing out and I woke up. I think I woke up kind of delirious around like 11:30 and it was like an hour till kickoff. And they came in and are like, are you going to go to the match? And I'm like, no, I can't. And I just passed back out. And I woke up like at like 2:30 when the match was already over. I think we ended up losing 2-1. So I'm not too sad that I missed it, but
yeah,
I was lucky enough to get tickets to Newcastle away the next week, and I was living the dream.
Okay, I'm severely disappointed for you for that nightmarish food poisoning story, but it sounds like you fully made up for it.
It was
going to that away match. This is just genuine question as someone who's never been to even a home match.
Yeah.
All right. Do they hate you that much?
So
away fans, how cool are they, or are they super not cool? You know what I mean?
The Newcastle fans are definitely super not cool, especially towards anybody. Honestly, I can't think of anyone that they might like.
Other humans. That's
a yeah, like I remember getting to the match and like I had like an Everton scarf on and I get off the coach and I see my mates and they're like, oh, we're just showing our colors. Okay, like who cares? Because I guess that you don't show who you support, which learning more about the history of hooliganism, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I was kind of in danger that night. You know, like that that meme of Ralphie.
I'm in danger.
Like, maybe I should have been more like that, but I was so naive. I didn't understand. I remember walking up, you know, like I actually had to go to the box office to get my ticket and pick up my away ticket. And I remember walking like past the Newcastle fans and they had like gates like between us and them. And they're just like, the fans are just shouting at each other through the gates and saying all this stuff and threatening each other and all the things that are never going to happen because the police are there staring at them like, yeah, we got CCTV. So good luck. You know. Yeah, it wasn't a pleasant experience towards them, but I barely ever saw them before the match. I just saw them in brief, and then after the match, I didn't see them because they lost, and they just went away with their tail stuck between their legs. So,
that sounds lovely. That part, that's
it was a good time, honestly.
Oh, geez, super jealous. Oh, these stories always, I get like super happy for you, but then I'm like, oh. Well, you
can one day. It's okay.
So all right. I want to start with this one really quick. I just got to say it because we have addressed it already once. T_Henny from Instagram asked Dina or Luca Dean get appealed, and yes, and cut down to one. So thanks. T_Henny, that's the deal, just so you know. Speaking of Luca Dean, DOVC123 asked a question, which I think is a unique question. Can Dean play in Gomez's role if Nkunku shines against Newcastle? So essentially doing what the Leighton Baines experiment that Roberto Martinez was hoping to do with Leighton Baines, like what they did with Philipp Lahm at Bayern Munich and all that stuff. I have a reaction, but I'm curious about yours first.
I don't really see the point of putting him there. Maybe I'm missing something with his game, but I think he's a player that can put in a great cross. I don't think his passing is what would be needed in a midfield role. I could see him possibly playing on the left wing, but at the same time, I think his defensive qualities are too good to be pushing him that far forward. I think Nkunku would be a better choice if we had to put him on the left wing, but I think he's a true left back. I think it would be kind of wild to put him anywhere else in the pitch, and I think no matter what Nkunku does, even if he scores a hat trick against Newcastle, I think Luka Dean still walks back into that role. I think that's his role, and it's going to be very hard to push him out of it.
I would agree. I would be curious to see the experiment. I'd be curious because I agree with Forrest. I think he is a natural left back. You see him bombing down the left. He's not. I remember when I first watched his tape before, like when we were rumored to be signing him, I was like, he's not a player that's going to beat players on the dribble. He's going to pass and move, pass and move, pass and move. He creates combinations with other players, and he tears off up the left wing. And so he does create combinations, but I do feel like a lot of times players, when they get used to having that sideline beside them and playing up against that, it's a different world when all of a sudden they've got players coming at them from all directions. Yeah. It's just a different world. And I don't know, if I'm honest, I feel like right now, Luka Dean is living his best life. So the idea of putting him in a new position, possibly opening him up to injury, is one thing. But he's just in such a good vibe and forcing him to adapt to something else. I feel like that's tough on anyone.
I'd love to see what the person who asked the question, why they think that. I'd love to hear that because I'm not somebody who's played the game at a very high level. So if they see something else in him that I may not see, I want to hear that, because I love to learn about these sort of things. I know Martin has talked about putting Leighton Baines in a Phillip Lahm like type role. It never happens because I don't think I just don't think he could adapt to that role at his age. I think Phillip Lahm is a once in a generation kind of player. And to Baines to do something like that, I think it was just a little too difficult for him at the time, and he served the club very well. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about Leighton Baines.
See, the reason I like the thinking outside the box of this question, because it's thinking, okay, let's get two strong players on the field. Let's try to potentially take a good player, mature player, put him in a position where he's considering a position of weakness, I'm guessing. And because we're stocked with these two solid left backs right now, we think. We're still not completely sure on Nkunku, but we think he's awesome. You know,
I like
that. We need to battle test him some more, though, yeah. Right? And we're going to get that this weekend.
Yeah, we will.
So, anyway, I like the thinking. I think it's good conversation. I think it'd be just kind of putting another good player on the field, and I would worry about the player adjustment.
Yes, no doubt.
So, Josh 172018 asks, with Richarlison out for two games, and do you think we should give Bolasie a chance?
No. Sorry, it's not going to happen. I think he's been told by the club and by Ancelotti that he needs to find a new club. I'm disappointed in players like him and Besic when they don't find a club during transfer windows, because to me that signals they don't really. I'll preface this by saying this. I like Bolasie a lot. I like the interaction he has with Blues on social media. I think he's a very positive influence in the dressing room. I'm sure he's a very positive influence for the younger players as well, because I can see him being the kind of player that supports them. But I think his time at the club is up, and I think Anthony Gordon, Bernard Iwobi are all ahead of him, and I can't see him coming back and being the player that he was before that injury. I think, and I always think back to that injury he had and how much it really who he was as a player, because I think he was a player that was really going to kick on for us before that. I think he really was showing some bright moments. It was really finding his feet, and then that happened. And I remember when it happened and seeing him, like he was almost like dead fish on the ground, like flopping around, because it was so much pain he was in. Yeah. It was so tough to see that. And I feel so bad for him, because I think he's such a lovely person and I would love to meet him one day, but I just think, you know, I don't think that would be a good experiment to make.
Number one, Bolasie, I don't think is on our Premier League squad roster.
That says it right there. Yeah.
I don't even think it's an option. Okay. So there's that. Number two, he was really, really close to a deadline day move on loan. Was it Middlesbrough?
Yes. Right? Yep.
Really close. And so that shows me a guy who's trying to play.
Okay.
Right. And I don't think it broke down because of him. I'm guessing it was discussion between the clubs and it just didn't get over the line. I like the guy, you know, and I like him a lot. I also like our manager, and I feel like our manager and our coaching staff and the players, they see this guy every day in training. And if they don't feel like he's the option at that moment, you know, I got a lot of respect for Carlo and his people, you know? And so I'm thinking maybe he's not the right match for that moment. I hesitate to say, you know, I'm not watching him in practice every day. I do think he probably busts his ass. You know, I do think he probably works hard. And is there a more charming guy on social media? No, he's just super nice. I think he's good energy. I hate all the stuff. I had my knee injury, the same knee injury at the same, like a day or two before his. Yeah, okay. It was ridiculous. Exact same, you know, ACL, meniscus, you know, just nasty knees went the wrong way kind of stuff. Yeah. And I hated it for him, because I kind of felt like, oh, if he makes it back, maybe I can make it back and play. You know what I mean? Yeah. But then again, had he done it, he's Yannick Bolasie. He's way more athletic. he's got a little bit of resources. Excuse me.
Hey,
but,
man.
I'm sorry.
Hey, man, Corona.
Hey, I've already had it. I had it in August. Yeah. Yeah. That was real. No, I've got asthma and allergies too, so it's a fun life, Forrest. But yeah, so yeah, old Yala to me. I didn't realize that's very similar to old Yeller. It's really bad considering the story of old Yeller. So that's really awful. So yeah, Yael Bolasie, I like him a lot. He's just not an option right now. And I think right now it's just we're looking like we need some inspirado.
Yeah.
With Richarlison off the bench. So yeah, when he's out, with Richarlison's out, you know, we're just going to keep looking until we find someone who's going to step up. Someone's got to step up at some point. Maybe.
That's who it is. That's who it is. I'm saying.
Maybe. Nikolai Robertson, realistic season expectations. And I'm going to combine that. I'm going to piggyback that one with meme day for you. Can we get top four? So those are two very similar questions. Forrest, I'm going to combine those and say, is top four a realistic expectation? And if not, what is?
It's a tough one. I think in my heart, I'll always think that top four is an expectation and one that we can meet. I think the way we've played at the beginning of the season and the way the teams that are supposed to be around us have played kind of give you some hope that that's a possible thing. I don't want to commit to anything, but at the same time, like, I want to say it's realistic. I think with the way the league is this year, it's almost seems very similar to the one Leicester won the league a couple of years ago. It's just there's a lot of teams in flux. There's a lot of teams who are in transition. I think you look at Liverpool, obviously they you know, they're a great team still. I think they're still the best team in the league by far. I think they still play the best football. But Van Dijk's out now. I think there's going to be questions asked about that defense. Fabinho's always obviously stepped in and played well. But can he do that over a season? You know, what if he gets injured? There's a lot of questions there for them now. They've obviously conceded 14 goals this season. That's a lot of goals in six mm-hmm. games. It's a lot of goals. Chelsea are in flux. Their defense can't seem to get their shit together. And they've obviously got a lot of talent. But if you're having to score four goals to just be able to win a match, that's not going to happen all the time. Mm-hmm. Spurs look fantastic. I think they probably got one of the deepest squads in the league. I think they look great. But City don't look like anything like they usually do. They're very far down the league as well. I think maybe Pep's time is kind of coming to an end there. And, of course, United. I mean, what can you say about United right now? They just can't find anything going for them. I feel for them to a certain extent. I don't hate Manchester United. I've got some good friends who are some United fans. And there's an old trope with Liverpool fans that Everton and United, like, go hand in hand. And, like, they put out a buffet when we play them at Goodison and stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day – I think top four is realistic. It's just, you know, our luck with injuries, our luck with suspensions, and how we continue to play. If we can continue to keep this form up, I mean, we definitely have Champions League form, let alone this might be title form. You don't know. I don't, you know, I think in our wildest imaginations, we say the title, you know, that's where we want to be. We see ourselves in first place here, and we think this is where we belong to be. But it's going to take a really big effort from the whole team to be able to maintain that form.
I think our starting 11 is very strong, and some of our depth is strong. Our center back depth, when healthy, that's a lot. It's great. That's a good core of center backs. It's a beefy group. It tends to be the case. One second it's a serious weakness. Next second we got like eight of them. Yep. You know, which keeps happening. Like, oh, we have no number 10. Let's buy four of them. You know what I mean? It just keeps – that stuff keeps happening. But, yeah, I think our initial starting 11 is strong. It's just the rest of our depth. So we're going to have some fortune with injuries over the course of a season. I think it's realistic. Good fortune happens to teams all the time. It's fully realistic for top four. Yes. Okay? Bad luck does not always happen. Okay? Are there going to be injuries? Yeah. We just got to hope they're the smaller injuries that last like a couple months, 1 or 2 months tops, and they can come back and we got players that can fill the void for a little while and that it's not major players at positions where we're not as deep. It's fully realistic.
Yeah. Like God forbid something happens to Calvert-Lewin. That would be genuinely worst case scenario because Richarlison has to play up top. We have to fill that left wing hole again. There's a lot that could go into that situation. I think I don't question Keane going out on loan because I don't think he was genuinely very happy here. I think that was shown in the goals scored in the League Cup, which is disappointing. Maybe he's just not taking to life in England. He's a young man, and he's moved from Italy, from a big club in Juventus, to a fairly big club in Everton. and just not really made the most of his time here. He's obviously scoring a couple goals at PSG. I think he'll do well there. I could see him scoring 15 goals and possibly getting himself a move there. You know, we'll see what happens. How could you not enjoy playing with Neymar and Mbappe and the team that PSG have and the league that they play in as well, where you can really express yourself as a player. But it's difficult.
It's tough with Keane because when I heard about the move, I'm like, cool, PSG blow a lot of teams out. He's going to get some playing time. They're not always going to start their, you know, all their starters. You know, they're going to want to play the other players, get them experience, and they can. I feel like Keane wanted more time, period. And yeah. I feel like he wasn't given guarantees about playing time here. And that made him less happy, right? It just, I mean, I don't have any inside Keane sources, but, or any sources, but, you know, it just tends to make sense. So you're not celebrating. You're like, yeah, because this game doesn't matter as much as a normal league game would, you know? Yeah. I don't know if it is that he doesn't like Everton, but I think it's that, or England even. I feel like if he was playing on the regular, I think he'd maybe be happier. That's just a guess because he does seem like somebody who would give it a chance, you know?
Yeah, you know, that first year.
Yeah.
Did score a lot, you know, I don't know. I see where you're coming from though with him wanting to find that playing time. And I think, like you said, at a team like PSG where they can afford to rest an Mbappe or a Neymar and bring him in and allow him the freedom to be himself against some of the lower teams in their division. It does make a lot of sense for him because I don't think that was ever going to happen here at Everton. I think we typically have to play our best 11 against anybody in the league. And that's mostly because the Premier League is just a stronger league than the French League. I think top to bottom, it's much stronger.
Completely.
Yes. And it'd be hard to justify putting him in, even if it's against the bottom place team and we're top of the league. Mm-hmm. It would be hard to do that because we want to continue to push on. And we're not at that level yet, unfortunately.
So that is some bonus Moise Keane info there. We just kind of went off there just because he's good conversation. I like him. I think he's great. Good
conversation. What can I say?
I just ooze it. Yeah. So we've talked about this earlier, but Mark Eaton 1112 asks, do we need to look for a backup for Richarlison? Both of us have said yes, I believe.
I'll stick by the fact that I think it's Anthony Gordon. I think that we have options across, maybe not the full front three, because I don't think we have anybody other than Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison who can play up top. But I think on the left side, we have Bernard, we have Awobi, we have Anthony Gordon behind Richarlison. I don't think, unless we saw Awobi and Bernard, and it seems like Bernard might move in January, I don't know if we'd go out looking for anybody, but I could definitely say it wouldn't be a bad, and it's probably something the club are looking at to do, is to bring in another attacking player. Maybe not in January, because I know Marcel Brands isn't a big fan of that window when it comes to bringing in players, because it's hard to find the value. It's hard to find a player who's going to come in and not, you know, they usually make an immediate impact when they come in January, but they don't keep that form when they go on. I look at somebody like Nikita Jelovic a lot when I think about players coming in January and blowing the league up. He scored like, I don't know, like 9 or 10 goals when he came in January, and they just never found that form again. Yeah. So it's a tough one. But I would say that Gordon probably deserves a chance before we ever go looking for anybody else.
I would like to see Gordon get a run of games if he has the opportunity. Gordon's an interesting player for me because I feel like I was always in the impression before he played as much with us that he was more of a central attacking player. And so it's interesting, like when I see him playing and he is very direct, which does give him some threat on the outside. And he is going to cut in, find some passes, get some combinations. He's great at that. I will, if I'm making decisions for Everton, I haven't made one in years for them. They haven't called me. But if I'm making a decision, I would chill. I would be okay with chilling with Gordon to give him a shot because I do have faith in the kid's work ethic. I have a lot of faith in that. I'd like to see him cut his teeth a little more. I was expecting a more polished forward player to come in to kind of move around the line wherever we needed him. You know, that's what I was expecting at the end if we brought anyone in. And it didn't happen.
With this COVID thing, it's hard to justify spending money, a big money on a player anymore. And I think we saw ourselves spend quite a bit on Allen, mm-hmm. on DeCore, on James, even though we allegedly got him on a free transfer. I think his wages are probably pretty big, and that's a big hit as is. You know, if somebody's on 150, 200K wages, I mean, that's 30, 40 million pounds right there. So it's hard to justify spending even more money on another player. And I'm sure we were in the loan market to look for someone. We brought Ben Godfrey in, which was kind of a surprise, but I think we really needed that cover in defense. And he was a player that we saw a lot of potential in and saw the opportunity to bring in ahead of some other teams who were looking at him. So January is going to be interesting. It depends. I'm sure if one of Bernard or Wobey, et cetera, leaves, I'm sure we'll see somebody come in to replace them, because we can't get any lighter and not bring anybody in, because it's just going to hurt our depth more than it already is right now.
Really quick, you talk about January. If it doesn't have to be January, but next transfer targets, Maloney One asked, who do you think our next transfer targets should be, personnel and positions? I can't give any actual personnel right now. I just don't. I mean, I could say positions-wise, I wouldn't be opposed to looking at another forward at some point, unless Gordon really shows himself to be really strong. It'd be nice to have that other option. Maybe not just that, if one of those wing players leave, like Bernard. If one of those players leaves, I'd be fine with getting a more veteran presence, one that has some experience. Someone who can be electric off the bench and be that behind the line type of player to help out. A right back option depends on how Jonjo Kinney's feeling, you know, and how he looks after that. But
I think a backup striker is probably going to be pretty high up on our list. I think so personally, because I don't think that if Calvert-Lewin gets injured, that putting Richarlison at the top is always going to be the answer. I think he's much more effective on that wing with Dean. I think the fear that they put into players, into teams, when they're able to be very direct and find that overlap, I think they've got a very good understanding. And I think he just does so much better being able to cut in instead of having to hold up the ball. I think another wide player is definitely on the shopping list too. Whether that's somebody that's, you know, going to be, I think we're kind of see how Iwobi does. I can't really, you know, say he's cut off right now, because obviously the season's long and he might get a run of games where he's very consistent and very good. I really personally think Bernard's time at the club is going to be coming to an end pretty soon. He's not very inspiring when he comes on. He has some moments, but he really is one of those players that floats in and out of games. And we have a couple of those players already. We can't afford to have too many in the team, any players who are really able to seize the day and to seize their moments. And right back, I think I would agree with you on right back too. I think Seamus Coleman's obviously getting on. I wouldn't say his health is an issue, but he does seem to pick up a niggle every
he's been playing well, but you're right. Absolutely. You know, there's if you ask an older player to play too many games in a row, inevitably they're going to have a dip.
Yep.
You know, and they need to recover. It's just humans.
Yes, and I like Jonjo Kinney a lot. I love any player that's grown up with the academy that is a supporter of the club as well. And I think everybody, you know, would love to see them succeed. He hasn't convinced me yet. I think even in the League Cup games, he's kind of been the one who's really struggled more than anybody else to really find his feet at the club. I think he played decently at Schalke. I think it was a great experience for him. But I think the club should probably look at options for a right back, and you know, we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But goalkeeper might be one that we really have to look at seriously in the summer. I love Jordan Pickard personally. I like him a lot. I know that he is hot headed. I know that he makes decisions that are bizarre and just out of this world. And I'm gonna give one more Everton story. So I was at the Anfield Derby. We lost 1-0 in the 96th minute. And kept the ball in when it was going out.
No.
I was at that Derby. And I know quite a few people who haven't forgiven him for that moment still. I didn't quite understand what had happened when I was watching live, because it was at the other end of the pitch. I'm in the away fans section. And all I see is the ball just bounced down and Arici just heads it into an open goal. And it was kind of crazy and surreal to be there in that moment. Everybody's kind of queuing up to leave, you know, it's the last minute of the game. We're like, whatever, you know, 0-0 draw against a very strong team. You know, we're looking on the up. We've been playing well at the time too. And nobody kicked off. Nobody was screaming or shouting. Everybody was just kind of like, huh, well, that just happened. And then it kept queuing to leave. Like, it was just like, it was one of those moments where it was almost too Everton to really like take in that moment. And I think once we got outside the ground, people's reaction started to show. But I don't know. I think the way I've thought of it and the way I've seen a lot of other people think of it as well is, as a player at Sunderland, he faced a lot of shots. He conceded a lot of goals, but that was when he was at his best, when he had a lot of shots to save. I think his concentration isn't there when he doesn't have to do a lot. I think he just in those moments, he loses himself, and he makes decisions that are erratic and not what you expect of a goalkeeper who is his country's number one and who is the number one of a club who's pushing for top four.
And that concentration is in training. You know what I mean? Like, you get that in training. I feel like I've been saying for a while, Pickford needs someone to push him, and he hasn't felt pushed in training at all. He doesn't
join. No,
he doesn't think he's going to lose his spot. Now, could Olsen be that guy?
I don't know.
We have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't seen him enough to know. I don't know anything about the guy. I'm sure we'll see him eventually. Maybe Pickford gets hurt. Maybe they play him in the Carabao Cup. Yeah. We'll see. That's in December, I think, when we play United. So we'll see what happens. But I don't think he's probably the answer to push Pickford either. But we need somebody. I think I was really hoping we got Sergio Romero, because I think he would have been the one to push Pickford. I think Pickford would have seen that and be like, okay, yeah, they've got the number one of another country coming in here. Like, yeah. I need to be on my toes, because he'll come right in. And if he stakes that claim for the spot, I'm not going to be able to win it back unless he starts out a different form. So
that was the one I was looking most forward. Yeah. I was excited about that. Yeah. I thought he could, that would be a really good player for him to learn from too. Yeah. I'm secretly hoping, I don't know enough about Olsen. And my ignorance is preventing me from being excited. I'm hoping that's what's going on. You got to have another player to push him. You got to have two solid players, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. They need to be able to play off each other. Yeah. And I think Olsen Sweden's number one. So it's not like he comes in with no pedigree. He's obviously played a lot of caps for his country. He's played at a high level for most of his career. So you expect him to be somebody who comes in. And I think everybody who's mentioned him in the media said he's very steadfast. He's sure-handed. He's also tall, which I don't think Jordan has going for him, unfortunately. As far as goalkeepers go, he's taller than me. You know, he's 6'1", but I think when you look at some of the better goalkeepers in the world, they typically be 6'3 to 6'5. It makes a difference. I won't say anything about his arms, because I don't think they're a natural short or anything. I think that's just rival fans, you know, just being rival fans and being like that. He does. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how the rest of the season goes for Jordan, and we'll go from there. That's all we can do.
Yeah. I think that's the way to approach it. The whole time I was saying, let's bring in a keeper to challenge him, bring in a keeper to challenge him, to push him, just to push him. I mean, if you got somebody breathing down your neck in training, you better be focused every single second in training. You develop bad habits when you're overly comfortable. Everyone does it.
Yep.
I've seen it happen with my 8-year-old. All right. He's in training. And if he feels like, oh, this is easy, he starts developing these like lack of focus issues. And so then when he gets in a moment, you know, he's going to slip. And it happens. So I have to be like, look, man, you got to learn. You got to breathe through those moments. You got to find your own motivation, you know? And if you can't, that's a lot for any person to find their own motivation if they're not being pushed.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Anyway, so DavidB.8 asks, who does Holgate replace when he comes back? Is it Keen? Is it Mina? Because David thinks that both have been great. Or is it a situation where neither one gets replaced?
That's a tough one. I definitely don't think it's Michael Keen. I think he has really staked his claim as one of those players that's whose name is first on the team sheet. I think, depending on Seamus Coleman's health, he should be playing at fullback when he comes back. I think he should be playing at right back because he obviously started his career there. He's definitely a center back. That's where his best abilities are shown. But I think he still naturally fits in that fullback role quite a bit better than Ben Godfrey does. If he does come in and plays a center back, I think he replaces Yerry Mina. I like Yerry Mina a lot personally. I think he is very charismatic. I think he's a player that not only gives his all on the pitch, but also knits the locker room together. Yep. Like very, 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 like he's so just like every video that the club put out about Yerry Mina that he's in, he's just smiling. He's happy. He's
terrific.
Loving life. And it's the kind of player that you really want in a locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I remember, I can't remember who it was on ESPN talking about basketball and how players in the locker room who don't really play but are there to be that charismatic person, to be a leader. Like they're the personality in there that really knits that together. When they leave, yeah. You can see the effect on the court because it's just not the same. He's one of those players that like he really brings people together. Like he's so like you could see him being like the number one, like is everybody's friend, like you could go to him for anything sort of guy. I think on the pitch, he's strong. I think he is capable of making mistakes that hurt the team pretty harshly. Great in the air, very, very dominating presence. And it's just fun to watch him play sometimes because he just throws his body everywhere. I think it was Brighton when he's on the ground, he's trying to head the ball still. Like, it's just the kind of player he is, it's the kind of character he is. And he can be frustrating and you know, heart in your mouth moments. In a game, but he's a great player. But I think Holgate has a composure on the ball that we need in the back four. We need to have both center backs having. And I would see him coming in to replace Mina, yeah.
I'd say both Mason Holgate and Yerry Mina have had little streaks where they have concentration lapses, where they don't track their man back, or they get pulled out too quickly, or they don't pressure someone at the right time. I would just – ride the hot hand and pair whoever the hot hand is with Keen each time. Yeah. And if someone has a bad game, replace them, you know, see, you know, and that's the point of the competition, right? That's why you have it. Otherwise you just got depth or fun.
Yeah. Nothing for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like you want to support your players, but you also want them to be on edge to keep that competitive edge.
Absolutely.
So, last thing, it's not a question, but CHRLO10 says, we win some, we lose some, but hold on. I can't read my own writing now. That is awful.
It happens. My handwriting's just as bad, trust me.
I feel like, no, I'm doing this guy wrong. I refuse to not get it right. I'm looking it up. Bear with me. This is happening. Let's see here. Oh, of course I just got another one. Okay.
Ooh.
We win some, we lose some, but that won't stop us up the toffees. It's not a question. It's just like a battle cry. You know what I mean? I will say, here's one. Just came in just now from Apartment Bubbly 3810, which makes me super happy. Playing the same formation, 6 games on the bounce in the Prem. Have we become predictable? Our midfield was completely snuffed out against Southampton. Should James start the next game, start on the left next game to get decent service to DCL with Ricci and Dean out?
Mm.
Do you play around and tinker? Do you do the stinker tinker?
That is a great question. I love the formation that we play now. I hate it. I could not stand watching us play that 4-4-2 when Ancelotti came in. I hated it. Like, I understand what a 4-4-2 is, and I understand why he played it because he didn't have the personnel in midfield. to play three there. But this 4-3-3 is the one I think we need moving forward. what I would say and what I hope ends up happening is James eventually, this eventually morphing into a 4-2-3-1 with James playing in the middle, and finding somebody who can play on the right, whether that's, I mean, maybe somebody at the club now, Wobi, probably not Bernard or Gordon, or going on the transfer market and buying one. I would say that James' best position is in that 10 role. He plays on the right because he's got such a wicked left foot, and the way we play now is getting Richarlison and Dean in space, and that's where most of our creative force is coming from. As far as predictability goes, I think most teams in the league play a 4-3-3 for the most part, some version of it, whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-1-2-3 as you'd look at it with a defensive midfielder sitting in front of the back four. Southampton played a 4-4-2, and I don't want to say they caught us in a bad day. I just think they just outplayed us, and the way the weaknesses that they exploited worked very well, and we just didn't find a way to exploit their weaknesses with that extra man in midfield. I think going forward, I don't think Carlo's the kind of manager who only has a plan A and can only has nothing back to fall back onto. I think he's been around for a very long time. He's, you know, somebody who doesn't typically get tactically outclassed. And is somebody I would trust with whatever formation he put on the pitch. If he wanted to play, you know, a 5-4-2, can't play that, 5-4-1. And, you know, have Calvert-Lewin way up top or, you know, on the right as a right wing back. I don't know. I trust Carlo Ancelotti fully. You know, what he does and the experience he brings to this team and who he is as a manager is somebody like he's not Marco Silva, who doesn't have the pedigree. It's not Ronald Koeman, who didn't care. And he's not Roberto Martinez, who would have a plan B. You know, he is somebody who's really comes in with that tactical noose, and it's the perfect man for the job at Everton, and somebody who I trust completely.
Well, I feel like he's a guy who could switch formations when he wants. I feel like it's not like a thing where he's like, this is what we're doing this year. You know what I mean? And I think he thinks, this is what I'd like to do. Yeah. If we need to switch, we switch. Yeah. But I think that's one of the things he really likes about 4-3-3 is honestly the fluidity of those positions. You know, there's some interchangeability there. It's a very free flowing, your players got to know their doggone roles, you know, and they have to be disciplined. 4-4-2 is like almost like idiot proof. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. This is keep it simple, stupid. You know what I mean? It is very like, this is, you know, I bought a book about soccer and this is how I do it. You know what I mean? But honestly, it's a good thing to do, to fall back, to keep things simple with a team you're new with, or maybe you don't have all the pieces you want. But now it's like, he's starting to accrue those pieces. I think you could see a formation shift if our players start getting injured. If we start and he starts losing pieces, you could see a shift on that. You could. Yeah. I could easily see it. Do I think it's a bad idea to move James to the left? Not as much, but I love the ability of James looking up, cutting in one touch and slamming it over to Luka Dean on the other side. I love the ability for him to be able to cut left and shoot, and he's centralized.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think he's a player who would do too great in the left, because I don't think he's a player who can beat somebody for pace. And, you know, as great as his dribbling is, it is something like it's crazy for me to have watched, you know, these first 5 or 6 games where he's played. And like, it almost seems like just predictable. Like it's just like going to happen. Like, he's going to cut it on his left and he's going to send it over. And you're like, well, how have they not stopped him from doing that yet? Yeah. He does it like just in and out throughout the game. He always finds a way to do it. It's like watching like Arjen Robben when he was in his prime. Yeah. He's like, you know, he's going to cut it on his left and curl it and shoot it. He's going to do it, but you can't stop him. He's just so good at it. He's so quick. He's got it so down pat. It's a real joy to see, you know? And I think the first few games we've seen of him, like the first three, in the Premier League, he was just unstoppable, unreal. You just see how much class he brings to the side. And now as we're getting further into season and the injuries and suspensions are coming in, you know, he's still the creative force. He's still the person who wants the ball. Mm-hmm. And now teams are going to be trying to stop him. So there might be a reason for us to play him in a different role or to find a different way to use him, because teams are, if that's the only way we have to create, then teams will eventually stop us from doing that. We're going to have to find a new way to do it. But I trust Carlo to do that. I'm sure he has far more than just a plan A. I'm sure he has plan A through plan double Z. So,
well, you know, I think it's an, I love people getting creative with their formations. I love people like thinking outside the box, this kind of stuff. I think it's good conversation. I don't think it's without merit, the idea. I just think, you know, I can think of reasons not to, you know, but does it mean like if Carlo shows up and does it, I'm going to sit there and be like, no, it won't work. I'll be like, hey, I hope this is awesome. You know, I'm always going to sit there and listen if someone's got a reason to back up what they're saying, instead of just going, I think Calvert-Lewin should be an outside back because my name is Ronald Koeman and that's the way I roll, you know?
Just do whatever.
Just, yeah. And here's my red Christmas tree. Right, so, it's such a sore spot. All right. That's the end of the mailbag, folks. That's an awful throw. I can do better. Much better. All right.
Before we start a Newcastle, I'm going to say one thing. I just had a mate of mine text me. There's apparently a new song coming out that's supposed to be like the sequel to what's it called? To Spirit of the Blues.
No.
So it's called COYB, so Come On You Blues. It's a single by Heir to the Blues. I don't know if that's apparently the club's supposed to be using it and promoting it soon. So it's on Apple Music is the way he sent it. I haven't listened to it yet, obviously, because we're on this podcast and I don't have Apple Music, but I'll go and find it on YouTube or Spotify or something. But give, you know, go and give it a listen and see.
Kids are going to flip.
Yes. That's I have no idea what it might be, but he's just sent it to me. So we'll see what happens.
Crazy. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We put Spirit of the Blues on my kids, like pump up mix before they play games. And it came on like 10 minutes before we got to his field. And so we were all, everybody in the car was singing that.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's
a great song. I love it.
Awesome. It makes me smile, like goofy smile. I watched every one of those videos, man. Every single one. I watched it with my kids and my wife got so sick of it. It was great. It's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, all right. So, anyway, hope you all paid attention to that. That was breaking stuff, like, as it's happening. Nice.
ITK.
Yes. He's a unicorn. He's a unicorn. They do exist. All right. Newcastle preview, just to throw out some stuff. Current form, 14th in the table with 8 points. They're 2-2-2. Recently, they drew 1-1 with Wolves, lost 1-4 to United, and beat Burnley 3-1. It seems like a very meh type of thing they've got going there. Possible lineup. I think Dubravka is actually hurt, so Darlow is going to be in goal. Manquillo, Lascelles, Fernandez, and Lewis in the back. Hendrick and Hayden in the middle. We'll see. Probably see Frazier. Make sure I say that right. Not Frazier. It's very different.
Coming down on you.
Yeah, that's right. Frazier, Almiron, Mickey Almiron. Love that guy. Never been an Atlanta guy, but I like seeing MLS stars actually do stuff.
Of course.
Saint-Maximin and Callum Wilson. I think your danger man is pretty much the entire front. I could see sparks of creativity coming from any of those four players up front. Mm-hmm. And obviously Lascelles is usually pretty forceful in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of pace. Just going off that team, which is something that hurts us typically. Saint-Maximin's had a decent start to the season. Mm-hmm. I think he's a decent striker. I don't think he's ever really kicked on in the way that maybe he himself expected to, or a lot of people expected him to become an England player. And Brian Frazier, I think, is a decent signing. I don't think he's a bad player at all. He showed some glimpses at Bournemouth, but I like to think that it might be a fairly open game. Newcastle are one of those teams who blow very hot or very cold. They always seem to go on like a 6 or 7 game losing streak throughout the season and still find a way to stay up for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's a tough one. I think coming off the back of a loss to Southampton, though, I do think there's going to be a reaction from the players. There better be a reaction from the players, because yeah, if there isn't, then there's going to be a lot of questions asked. Not just by the media, but by us as fans as well. Kind of because we saw what happened at the back end of last season after the quarantine, after the lockdown, and then the project restart coming around. I think we saw that we just didn't look very good. We weren't creating a lot of chances. It was tough to watch sometimes. It was very turgid football, and it would be tough to see us go back to that. I don't think we will. I think we've got a lot more creative impetus in the side now with James. I say Anthony Orton comes in and starts, and Cuckoo comes in.
I was going to ask you about your lineup thoughts on there. Do you think Gordon is going to be the guy?
I think so. I definitely don't think Iwobi gets a nod. I'd be really surprised if Bernard got the nod, because I just don't think he's the answer there on the left, unfortunately. Again, he's a nice guy. He's a good technical player. He's got a lot of attributes to him, but I don't think he's really built for the Premier League, unfortunately. I think a lot of what he has physically just kind of goes against him. And I think Anthony Gordon deserves that. I think he's been really raring to go. I think earlier in the season, he was asking questions of Ancelotti why he was getting left out of the squad. I think he's the kind of player who would come in, and even if he doesn't really have a great game, he's going to be somebody who really seizes that chance and gives her all. I don't want to sit here and ask questions of Iwobi in terms of him not giving his all. I just don't think he had a great game, and I think it was bad enough for him to not deserve a start against Newcastle. I think Gordon deserves to come in. I'd also like to see Gomez come in and replace Sigurdsson. I personally think that was a mistake by Ancelotti. I understand why he did it, because Gomez was atrocious against Liverpool. He couldn't make a pass forward. Every single pass was overhit, or just not to the man. And I understand why he did it, but I'd still like Sigurdsson, man. It's tough for me to watch him play sometimes. Like he has so much ability. He's got so much technical ability, but I don't know, his work rate used to be great, and it just doesn't seem to be there anymore. I think a lot of my friends and a lot of the people that I followed for a long time on Twitter have said that he's the kind of player who's just, he's standing there and he's pointing to give the ball to somebody else, and he doesn't want to receive the ball himself and turn around and create something. He's just, it's almost like the fire's not in him anymore. And maybe, I don't know, maybe his time at Everton should be up soon, but we paid so much for him. It's hard to find somebody where we could recoup even a decent amount of that money back. So
he had just been looking so good off the bench though for us. He had been, when he was coming in,
yeah,
I was thinking, okay. And I didn't think he started the game that poorly. I thought he was doing all right. I'm curious. I don't know, though. I'm not a huge fan of when the chips are down, players just kind of,
yes.
You know what I mean? I felt like he did kind of, you know, and I don't really like that. I mean, let's be honest, Gomez had not had a solid string starting there for a little while, right? So it's a tough one. I'm not going to throw a fit if Sigurdsson starts. I'm just going to throw a fit if he does the same stuff and he stays in.
Of course.
That's what I'm going to be pissed, you know.
I think that third midfield position, I think Allen and Decore have those the defensive midfield and that first central midfield position pretty locked down. Yeah. I think that third midfield possession is where we're going to have questions asked. I think Gomez still deserves to be the starter. I think he's the one who links up the best with the other two, and the one who's really is the one who's trying to find passes forward more often than not. I think Sigurdsson still, like, again, I think he's a better option off the bench at this point. I think he's somebody who can come in and influence the game better when it's the 60th minute and there's tired legs out there, because he can find that space and create that space for himself. And he obviously has such capability shooting from long range. Like, I can't think of the last time he shot from distance and it hasn't been on target. Like he's so consistent with that. It's such a joy to see, but it's just that work ethic when it comes to starting matches. I think he's one of those players that, like, when you said when the chips are down, he just doesn't seem to have that mental fortitude to bring himself to say, well, look, we're gonna get this goal back. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's me questioning him too much, but it's frustrating to see him especially when he starts and not to grab that chance. I don't think he played too terribly the first part of that game against Southampton, but he didn't kick on. He didn't continue to to try to create chances. Maybe that was a tactical error. Maybe it was just him. I can't really say because I didn't. I need to rewatch the game to really understand it. But I would
trust me, it's not fun. I rewatched it. It's not fun.
I wouldn't want to, honestly. I'd like to keep it back in my mind.
But I personally, I think if Gomez is healthy, you start him, you go back, because that's just what I would do, because that situation was working for Sigurdsson. And in previous matches, we were having decent results with Gomez, even though, so if he's had time to recuperate, maybe he needed a rest. Cool. We've given it to him. Maybe he comes back revitalized and he looks a little more like Andre Gomez is supposed to. I agree. I would prefer that arrangement. Because Sigurdsson is a different, it's a tactical adjustment. He's going to approach things very differently than Andre Gomez will. And you're going to get those creative moments from him normally, I would hope. I'm cool with that. We're going to see Godfrey in it right back again, probably.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah. I mean,
I figured.
Unless Coleman's fit, I don't think there's another option to really put there, unless John Joe Cooney's fit too. But I'm sure we'll know more tomorrow or Thursday, or when it comes to press conference time as to what Ancelotti has to say about that. You see, Ancelotti, so I like him a lot. I mean, I like what he did. Personally, I like what he did a lot with James last week. Yep. Saying, he took a knock from Van Dijk, and he's like, oh, but he's fine to play. The next day, he's like, oh, he's fine to play. Don't worry about him. And he trained and everything. And I know there was kind of a stir, and Paul Joyce, the writer for the Times, he kind of took a swipe at Ancelotti there. It was like, oh, that point scoring. Why would you mention Van Dijk by name? But again, the fallout from that incident has just been, it's been wild, and it's been crazy to see it all happen. But we hopefully all move on from it. It needs to be something that's put in the past, because it's just, it gets old. It got old really quick, and it continues to get old.
I would wonder, frankly, if Paul Joyce was not a Liverpool supporter, if he would have still have asked that question. You know, okay. I think he would probably say, of course I would. It's newsworthy. You know, he'd probably say that. But I just don't think it would be worded like that. I just don't.
It seemed like he took offense to what Ancelotti was saying. It seemed like he took it on a personal level, because typically a reporter doesn't, you know, keeps your composure and doesn't ask a question like that unless they take something on a personal level, or, you know, I don't know. But he is a Liverpool supporter, despite what Coffey's trying to say. He is not a Blue.
Yeah, he is a
supporter. It's pretty plain to see.
He gives all kinds of updates on our preseason matches when the scores aren't going well for us.
Exactly. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Cool. So prediction. What's the score going to be?
I say 2-1 Everton. I think we kick back and win. Oh, this is something I didn't touch on. Is that what
you read that? Can you read that right there, that bottom line?
I see it. Yeah. 2-1. I want to touch on this real quick. I'm really disappointed with the fact that we haven't been keeping clean sheets. It's like, I know that Michael Keane is playing well, but we haven't kept a clean. We didn't keep one against West Ham, did we? They scored, right? I'm not going crazy. In the Carabao Cup. I'll talk about the league. It doesn't matter.
I think they did score. Yes, they did, like right after halftime, I think. Yeah.
We haven't kept a clean sheet since Spurs, opening day of the season. And that's a worry. I know that goals in the Premier League are everywhere right now, and that clean sheets seem to be a thing of the past. They're not going to ever exist again. Mm-hmm. But it's not good if we're having to score, you know, 2 to 3 goals every game to be able to win, you know, 5-2 against West Brom, 4-2 against Brighton. You can't go into games. That kind of makes me think of Martinez towards his, you know, in his last couple of seasons, where, yes, we're scoring goals, but we're shipping goals like crazy. It makes me think of that game against Bournemouth. It was like 6-2, 6-3. You know, like we can't have score lines like that. I would rather us win 2-0 than us win 6-2. Because I see 6-2 and I think, God, like, we played really well going forward, but we still got caught out in the back. We conceded 2 goals. Like, in other circumstances, that could be a 2-2 draw. That could be a 2-1. Yes. Like, you don't know. Like, we've got to find a way to get clean sheets, because that's only going to build the defense's confidence. It's going to build Pickford's confidence.
Especially. Pickford's the one I was thinking of. Yeah. You know, that was when you were saying that, I was like, just think about that. You know, you're sitting there keeping clean sheets over and over and over again.
Yep.
And Beautiful. And I feel like part of it is us not putting it in certain positions. Got it.
Yep.
That's true. Okay. But there's going to be times where he just needs to be sharp. And it's just, it's a collective effort to not be keeping clean sheets. Yeah. It is collective right now. And, Absolutely. And until we actually get a little continuity on the defense, because let's be frank, we had a backup right back at our previous match. Yeah. Didn't help things. Now he's a stout defender, but he got found out a time or two. It did happen. You know, I love the kid. He's a great player. I love him. I don't want to rely on him at right back. Okay. So I do think that didn't help things. But a little continuity on the defense, you know, we'll see what can happen from there. It's a genuine concern though, Forrest. I'm with you, man. I'll take points any way I can get them, but there's going to be times where it's nil-nil late.
Yep. And we've got to keep our heads. Yeah. But yeah.
Stay together, Cheeks.
He went to the Blues.
Yeah, this is okay. All right. So that is the end of the show. Hey, yay. So Forrest, do you have any stuff I need to plug? Any like, hey, it's Forrest's, I don't know, house of oddities that you run up in Annapolis or something. Anything where you're like, hey, this is my thing and I'm Forrest.
I want to sit here and make a Trailer Park Boys reference, but I don't know how many people watch that.
I've seen like one season, so I don't know.
No, I won't then. But just follow my Twitter. That's typically the one social media account that I'm most I'll say vulnerable, but more visible and open to conversation on. My Instagram is private. It's more of a personal thing for me with pictures. Mm-hmm. My face is my Facebook. I typically if I know you personally, I'm gonna add you on there, or you can add me. But you at USAEFC, you know, that's my Twitter handle. I interact. I'd love to interact. Hopefully in the near future, I'll be doing some writing as well. I know I've had some offers from, I think from the Toffee Blues and from a couple of other websites to do some writing for them, but it's just never come at a good time in my life. I think now I'm starting a new job soon. I'll be on my computer a lot more, so I'll have a lot more opportunity to be able to write.
Well, you provide just the best segue. Look at how you do segue. You give great segue, my friend. So hopefully you do write for the Toffee Blues at some point. That would be cool. Honestly, if I'm reading anything of yours, that's cool. I just like the idea of seeing my peoples, you know, sitting there develop and kind of doing their stuff. And especially the fact that that's a genuine, like, you know, path for you. That's great. They're always looking for some, you know, hungry writers that can give some solid analysis. Very cool. You would join a team full of cool cats over there who are all nice to me. Usually they're very kind. As he mentioned, Toffee Blues does have a website. There's a lot of Everton-based content, all things Everton. You see some of the contributors on this channel all the time, if you're watching via YouTube, or if you're listening via podcast, you probably hear them on here all the time as well. So check out the Toffee Blues website. You can see the the stories, player ratings, match reactions, all that kind of thing on there. Check that out. And maybe in the future, a little bit of Forrest. Also, if you're not a subscriber to the Toffee Blues on YouTube, please do so. We'd appreciate it. Just honestly, it's all about just making us feel nice about life. That's just the number goes up and big thumbs up. It just feels it's all it's about, you know? So do that. We'd really appreciate it. Drop us a comment here or there, you know, drop us a message. We appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And last thing, people who are on podcast, you can't see this, but I'm holding up a copy of my children's book, Randolph the Christmas Moose, which actually came from a Toffee Blues podcast. The idea came from that. And oh my gosh, me and my friend, who is actually a Liverpool supporter, made this book. And it's all about a moose who likes to run.
Ah.
So, yeah. Moose wants to be a reindeer. Moose wants to run with the reindeer. Reindeer don't let him, but he ends up training to try to train with them. And then they're like, no, you know what? You're a big moose, so you have to go to the loading dock. But he ends up working his way through, and Santa ends up being cool with them. It's the anti-Rudolph story, essentially. I didn't like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I felt like he was kind of, he was treated poorly. And then when they were like, hey, Rudolph, we need you, he's like, okay, guys, I'm back. And so this is the anti-Rudolph story. So if you end up wanting a weird book for Christmas, yay, that's my plug. Yay. So, yeah, I never plug that well. I'm just telling you, I'm new to marketing my own stuff. I don't know how to do it yet.
I got 100 copies of it.
There we go. See, Forrest, I need you on all the time to pitch my stuff. I'm so bad at it. Always like at the last second, I'm like, oh, yeah, marketing. I don't know how to say nice stuff about my stuff. So, yeah, anyway, if you feel like checking it out, do it, please. I appreciate it. Anyway, that is it, Forrest. I just want to tell you, thank you so much for coming on. It is nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice.
When I first got on, I had no idea you're from North Carolina. Yeah. And that's freaking awesome. Now, I played college soccer for Belmont Abbey. I was there in the 90s, oddly enough. So, yeah, I know Charlotte pretty well. I went to UNC Charlotte for a couple years too, oddly enough. So, yeah.
Cool.
Probably way before you because I'm old.
You don't look it.
Well, you said, yeah, DeGray. Look at all that. It's there.
I thought it was Bond.
So. Yeah, these are my highlights. It's gray highlights. All these. Yeah. So anyway, but it's really cool. Hopefully we're in town. We hang out down in Charlotte. That'd be really fun. Love the opportunity. But honestly, just talking with you here, this has been awesome. Good to talk to you. And good luck and becoming the next Everton Director of Communications.
Oh, I'll get there. That's my life passion. My life.
Do it.
I'll get there. I'm not worried.
Do it. I want to be able to go over there and be, I should point to my kid. Point you out to my kids and be like, that guy. He's gonna take us on a tour right now. Check this out. So,
hey, guess where I got your seats? Press.
I'll literally settle for setting foot in England. For now, we're gonna settle for that. Forrest, thanks so much, man. And for everybody else out there, good news. It was a pretty low point on Sunday. I think we're in for some more positivity coming up this weekend. Let's do this. 3 points. No more nonsense, please. And I don't care what color kit we're wearing. Mm-hmm. Forrest, take care, man. Thanks again. All right, everybody. Sorry. It's like you were talking. I was like, I'm talking at the same time you are, and they can't hear you. And especially they can't hear you on a podcast. Oh, my gosh. So Forrest, see you later, man. Thanks.
Yes, Jerry. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right. All right, everybody else. Bye-bye. Have a good one. Take care. Later.
Bye.